6 never, ever marks the spot.
I am altering the deep. Pray I don't alter it any further.
Most of the intelligence community doesn't believe he exists. The ones that do call him the Winter Soldier.
I'm Batman.
Dracarys.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to this week's episode of the Top 5 Report, the podcast that would like to say happy National Fathers, Brothers, Nephews, Cousins, Former Roommate Day. My name is Drew. I'll be your host for the evening. Along with me, as always, is my brother, Peter. How are you, sir?
I'm here, and what does that make us?
absolutely nothing.
Yep, there it is.
I was like, crap, but we're brothers. We're actual brothers. at any rate, how was your week, man? How have you been?
Pretty good. Nothing too terribly exciting going on with me. How about you? How about yourself?
Well, I have new stairs in my house, and
okay,
they
nice.
start on the new floor on Monday. So the day this episode goes live, my floor will be ripped up and under construction.
Cool.
So we're moving right along. Actually, I don't know where. In the timetable of doing construction on your house, they give you kind of like a completion date. And I always look at it going, you know, what's next? But I think we're right on par where like we're supposed to be, like in terms of like any delays or anything like that. We're right where we're supposed to be in terms of completion. So good stuff.
Awesome. And just to reiterate, this is the installation of your Bat Cave, right? That's what we're talking about.
This is the installation of the Bat Cave. And I made... Well, when you put a room above the garage, you have to have a bat pole that goes into the garage so you can get into your cool car, right? That's what's actually going on.
Oh, there you go, yeah.
Yeah. Actually, the stairs, because we had to put some stairs in because the floor and the roof of the garage where it doesn't fit right. Like, it doesn't line up perfectly. So there's a couple stairs up. And the guy's like, he came over to put the stairs and he goes, shoot, they cut something wrong. I'll be back. And he's like, just don't go. Just be careful because it's an open hole. And like, you literally have a hole staring into the garage. And I'm standing there with the kid and I are like, you want to jump in there, don't you? You know, like, of course you do. Anyway.
That's awesome. Well, you're actually reminding me, I always thought a fun list would be our top five fire poles from pop culture. You know, we've got 66 Batman. We've got the Ghostbusters. That's probably about it, but I'm sure there's three others that we could talk about.
That is a good point. But yeah, enough about the construction of my house, because that's not what people want to hear about. Peter, what did you watch this week?
Yeah, absolutely. I did get a couple things in. Still feel like it's a busy time of year for me, so not watching as much as I would like to, but I did get some things in. The first thing I can mention, which I can kind of keep pretty vague because it's like a full TV series sort of thing, but I did finish Peacemaker Season 1 finally,
sure.
So I can finally start to join the current folk and start watching Peacemaker Season 2. So that's going to be pretty great. But Season 1, I think it's like, it's just such a fun show. It's hilarious. The action's amazing. The gore's amazing. I loved when you got to the end of the season. I loved the cow, you know, this giant hidden
right.
alien animal that they've been milking
right, and
this weird butterfly honey out of, but
yeah,
no,
and when you were
there?
Well, when you were talking about hoping, you're like, I hope when we get to that reveal, it's going to be the James Gunn super creepy creature nonsense, and it sure is, you know what I mean? I just had to be like, hold my tongue and be like, you'll get there.
So it is. I think I was kind of hoping for more of a battle against the cow itself, You know, the cow is kind of like this giant chained up creature that's more or less helpless. There is a huge fight with all the butterfly characters. Like, the fight scenes at the end of the series are great, but I think I was expecting something closer to the opening scene of Guardians of the Galaxy 2 with, like, the giant weird tentacle monster they're fighting against. Nonetheless, it was still a really awesome season. There's certain parts of the season where I feel like, I don't want to say, like, character motivations are clunky, but there are parts where, like, you know, like when Peacemaker reveals at the end of the season that he considers Adebayo his best friend. Part of me is like, well, I mean, would he consider her that? But then I also think, like, well, I mean, there's not too many people who are going for that friend spot besides, like, no, maybe that would happen. That would play out that way. And I do know that, I mean, I've seen some minor spoilers for the second season. I do understand that that friendship there actually does play a big role in the second season. So I'm here for it. I'm excited to see where that goes. But no, Peacemaker season one, I loved it. I still love the hair metal soundtrack. I love all the humor. It's all great. I don't know if there's anything you've been holding back, Drew, on Peacemaker season one. And I also don't know, have you started season two yet as well?
So, to answer to your first question, no, I wasn't really holding anything back.
Okay, cool.
The first season was a phenomenal season. I know I have a little bit more love than I might should have for the Wing Wham opening theme song. But the season two, I have not started yet because I was waiting to get another run at Superman because my wife has not watched Superman yet, but she now has seen Superman. So now it's time to actually jump on the Peacemaker bandwagon. I haven't started it yet, but it's time to jump on it. So
speaking of Superman, so in my house, that's pretty much been background noise for like the past week, which is awesome. Like, my kid loved that movie in theaters. So he keeps putting it on and I want to watch it. So we've been just like, it's probably like 3 or 4 times this week. We've just had it on in the background and, you know, you tune in for certain parts and it's just awesome. It's awesome to have that superhero or that Superman movie like that again, because I remember when Man of Steel first came out, I pretty much watched that movie on repeat for a while. And this new one's great. And it's awesome that it's on HBO Max. Like, it's so convenient. You know, I don't even have to put a DVD in. I just have it right there ready to go. So have you been rewatching this at all? Or did you just kind of watch it the one time?
I've only had time for that second rewatch. Okay, and that's enough. Just mostly because of construction in my house more than anything. So
you're like yelling at the construction workers, like, keep it down, they're in the pocket universe, guys.
Yeah, right.
Keep it down, this is the kaiju scene, this is my favorite part,
guys. Metamorpho's like, doing the thing, like.
Yeah.
Anyway, yeah,
absolutely.
No, that's honestly been the most big, that's been the big distraction. So yeah,
that's great. I do have one other thing, which you're going to hate me for this, Drew, because I still have not started Alien Earth. I know I'm horrible, and I think that just concluded, I want to say.
Just concluded.
Okay, so if you do want to spoil stuff again, I'm totally fine for it, because I'm a piece of crap who hasn't started the show, but if it makes for a better podcast and you want to spoil stuff, that's totally fine. I'm still planning on watching the show, still looking forward to it. But the one other thing I watched is a completely, completely random movie that I hunted down on Netflix. And that's why, Drew, I'm going to say you're going to hate me, because I'm watching random Netflix movies instead of starting Alien Earth. But I hunted down this film, and it was one of those things where it was like last weekend, it was like one of those things where before bed I was just looking for something to put on, and you know, sometimes you go into Netflix and you type into the search bar like superhero movies or comic book movies or whatever it is, and that night I did that. I typed in like comic book movies and I was looking at what Netflix had, and I ended up watching this Spanish detective thriller film called Unknown Origins. Have you heard of this? Are you familiar with this at all, Drew?
No, but okay. This goes right to what you said about not watching Alien Earth, and you're watching Unknown Origins, some weird... Yeah, all right, go ahead. There's nothing wrong with it.
No, it's actually pretty cool. This is why I know you're going to hate me for this, but it was just, I was in the mood for a random movie. But Unknown Origins, again, it's a Spanish, like it's an international film from Spain. It is a detective thriller, but it was in the comic book section of Netflix, which is kind of interesting. Mm-hmm. But the reason for that is because this movie is awesome, because it's pretty much like, I don't know how you would describe this movie. I guess it would be kind of like Mallrats meets Seven, if you will. Because what this movie is about is, if you compare it to the movie Seven, where you have the serial killer who is killing people based on the seven deadly sins, this movie is Seven, but for superheroes. So you have a serial killer who's killing people based on superhero origins. So, excellent. Like, the first body they find is this scientist that the killer kidnapped and forced to work, like, basically had him in captivity, forced him to work out and take steroids and bulk up, and also fed him chemicals that would change the color of his skin, and his skin turned gray, like in the origin for the Incredible Hulk. A lot of people forget that the original Hulk comic, the Incredible Hulk, is gray. And so he basically forced this person to become the Hulk from a scientist, just like in the comic. And then he staged the brutal, like, slaughter scene that the detectives are investigating. There's like other characters who are based on like Iron Man's origin, where, you know, they find this guy who's like, you know, this millionaire guy who's decked out in a suit of armor with like his heart pulled out and with like electrical wiring like injected into his heart and stuff like that. It's really weird stuff like that, but it ended up being like a really cool mix between sort of this like nerdy, like Mallrats fanboys sort of thing and the movie Seven. And it's really funny because one of the main police officers in the film, that guy's son works at a comic shop. So it ends up being like the detectives keep going to the comic shop, talking to the son like, okay, here's the crime scene we found now. What does this relate to within superheroes? And it's kind of like a really fun meta film. I thought this was really cool. I really enjoyed it. I will say the movie does start out a lot closer to Seven in tone, where it's more dark, you know, gruesome crime scenes, dark thriller sort of thing. And by the end of the movie, it ends up becoming full-on superhero, nerdy, kind of lighthearted sort of thing. So it's a very weird movie where it goes from being Seven to eventually being a full-on superhero film. That is spoiling too much, but I still think this is a really fun kind of diamond in the rough for anybody who's into superhero cinema. The last thing I will say is there are some superhero elements in this film. Like, dare I say, there might be some super villain and or hero costumes. And the costumes and the production design and stuff actually looks pretty badass. It's not necessarily your MCU, DCU level production value, but if you can watch this and think about, like, you know, just loving superheroes and that sort of thing, and keeping in mind that this is kind of an independent foreign film, I think the production quality on this movie is pretty great. So that's my diamond in the rough, Unknown Origins on Netflix. Everybody should check it out if you're into comics. That's what I say. So there you go.
There's nothing wrong with the random finding something like that on the Netflix, for sure.
Absolutely. So that's actually my favorite thing to do, is find random stuff like that and then report back on it for the show. I just know I'm driving you crazy because I haven't started
Alien. I just want to talk to you about Alien, but that's okay.
Right on. But again, if you do have to spoil, feel free.
I know. I will say that, yes, I did watch the season finale of Alien Earth. And they really did, in my opinion, stick the landing in a big, bad way. It was great. I really feel that, I really hope it's not a one season show. If it is, they ended it in a weird, how about this? They ended it, it closed. Everything's kind of closed, except they left some spaces lingering, in the sense that, like, okay, if you do another season, it'd be great, because it would like answer some stuff. But if you don't do another season, it was a really good ride and you guys understood the assignment and you did a great job putting it together and I'm down and you gave me the eyeball creature, which is probably next to the Xenomorph, one of my new favorite alien creatures ever. So that's what I'll say to that. But yeah, dude, they stuck the landing. It was great. And we got some great Xenomorph stuff. And I feel like there was way more Xenomorphs in it than I was expecting to get. So that was just awesome too. So,
see, yeah. You keep saying stuff about the show that leaves me puzzled. And, the fact that it's an alien show and you say there was more aliens than you were expecting, you know, that kind of, makes me scratch my head, but I still got to watch it and report back.
Yeah. You got to watch and you'll understand all of it when you see it. And and that's the thing, anyone watching the show, look, they had really great, characters. They had some cool stuff with the synthetics. There were a lot more synthetic people in this. And then there was some surprise. You're like, oh, like there was a surprise. There was a point in the finale where I was like, oh my God, he's a synthetic character. That's crazy. Like, I didn't expect that. You know what I mean? So yeah. This little thing, there's that kind of stuff, you know?
Okay,
so,
nice.
Yeah, I think you'll, I just look forward to talking to you about it.
Awesome.
I did watch Superman again. It was a great pass. There's a lot more references to Crypto not being his dog than is sort of let on. And I say that because I didn't catch him the first time through in the theater as much as I caught him this time. And I'm like, hey, man, the amount of times he says it's not his dog, we should have picked up on it that it's probably Supergirl's. You know? So yeah, but that was cool. And then the other thing that I watched, I started Only Murders in the Building season, the new season. I only watched the first couple episodes, off to a great start. Can't wait to see how it plays out. That's such a great show. Peter, again, that's a show that you need to get on because you being the murder mystery guy, you would love it.
For sure, yeah.
And being a podcaster, you would love it. And then
to be fair, I never call myself the murder mystery guy, but I know what you're saying.
No, I don't mean like that. You just like murder mystery stuff. So I think you're gonna love the show, absolutely. But you're also a podcaster, which the show is about podcasters.
Sure,
you're gonna love it. And they take it to a level of they take it to a whole different level of like we sit down, we record once a week. Everything's fluid. We just have this like cool little conversation, and then I do a quick edit and post the show. These guys record throughout the week and have all the sound bites and all that kind of stuff. It's crazy, you know what I mean? So that's why I'm saying, like, I think it's cool. So
awesome.
At any rate, let's see. I also watched, surprisingly, I watched the 2011 Three Musketeers movie, which I had never seen.
This is the
one
Paul W.S. Anderson version.
Yeah, this is the one. Yeah, Paul okay. W.S. Anderson. It's got Orlando Bloom in it, Mila Jovovich, James Corden, which I wasn't expecting James Corden in the movie, Juno Temple, Christoph Waltz, Mads Mikkelsen. I was like, there's a cast in this movie. I never watched it. It looked goofy from the trailer. And then not only did it look goofy, but it also got a lot of bad reviews. So I just passed on it. This is you can hear my dog making noise because someone came over. So sorry, everybody, my dog's out there. So at any rate, so not only that, but the algorithm in the whole, like, you should watch this next, you know how they do the recommended for you. That was one of them. And I'm like, so either the algorithm is actually listening to us talk on the show when we say things because of things popping up, which I'm pretty sure that's the case, or B, it's just that algorithm of, you know, what you watch. So anyway, I watched the movie. I'm going to say this. There are some clunky stuff with the plot for sure. There's some over the top things, like this one has airships. Which the yes. airship battle's kind of cool. I'm not going to lie. The airship battle was pretty cool. The sword fights were great. The humor was actually pretty decent. Well, there were a couple missteps, in my opinion, with the humor. Most of it was James Corden's fault, in my opinion. But the sword fights were fantastic. The action scene was pretty good. The King drove me nuts because it was just a weird casting.
Okay.
it was a weird, in my opinion, it was not like the, if you compare it to the Three Musketeers Disney film, the King's also a weird casting, but he fits for some reason really well. This one, I don't think he fit that well. And the production design on his like costume and stuff was just really strange what they were doing with it. So I'm like, cause every time you saw him, he was in a different costume, but it was really kind of very out there. And I'm like, this is, yeah, okay, whatever. But the one thing I think they were trying to do, the actually were trying to do with this with the movie was I think they were trying to capture the heart of the Disney Three Musketeers film. And then build off that. Like, and I really think they nailed it. I really do. They tried to capture that heart and excitement and adventure, and they really grabbed it. And I'm like, yeah, dude, this, I thought it was actually pretty decent. And I'm kind of sad. I mean, I don't think it was going to be a rush to the theater. I don't think I would have paid money to see it in the theater, but watching at home, I'm surprised I didn't watch it sooner. So how about that?
Oh, you know, cool.
And I liked the casting of when you got to the casting of like Athos, Porthos, and Aramis. I really liked what the casting choices for those. Porthos was probably my favorite of the three this time around. And D'Artagnan, he definitely was not as cocky as Chris O'Donnell comes across. Right?
Fair enough.
So, yeah. But anyway, I thought the movie was pretty good.
That's good to hear. I haven't watched this one either, but I always thought it looked... I thought it looked kind of like silly, but probably a lot of fun. Like when it comes to the airships and just knowing it's Paul W.S. Anderson, so it's just going to be like batshit bonkers the whole time. But yeah, I don't know. I kind of lost my train of thought, but yeah, sounds awesome. I'll definitely have to check this one out.
Yeah, you're all good. But yeah, that's honestly what I got for you.
Awesome.
So that's my watching and reading for the week. Do you want to head on over to the news?
Yeah, let's go for it.
Cool. I thought news, for some reason, I thought was going to be very light this week, and then all of a sudden it was an explosion like usual. So there is that. All right, quick stuff. Looks like we might get another American Pie film. And I say that with going back with the legacy cast. I know they did some spinoff movies, but this is going to be legacy cast level. And right now it looks like it's American Funeral, which is kind of sad. But
okay.
If this is real, because this, I think, is still in like possibility phase, possibility rumor, speculation kind of thing. Like, it sounds like this is a legit thing. But they're saying that it's basically Stifler's mom has passed away. That's wow. The funeral. And Stifler's dad has to come back, comes back for the funeral, and he's going to be played by Charlie Sheen. It sounds fun, and I'm like, okay, cool. Yeah, they'll take a little more serious tone with it because it's a funeral, but when you throw in the American Pie stuff, the hijinks that can get involved, you know, it could be cool.
Oh no, it's gonna get absolutely ridiculous. So yeah. That sounds hilarious.
Yeah. All right. Let's see here. Christopher Nolan has been elected president of the Directors Guild of America. On September 20th, Christopher Nolan was elected president of the Directors Guild of America, succeeding Leslie Linka Glatter, a longtime guild member and advocate for the theatrical filmmaking. Nolan will lead nearly 20,000 directors into 2026 contract talks with studios, signing a focus on creative rights and the future of cinema and rapid industry changes. I don't need to go into the accolades of all the stuff he did because after that it goes into like over his career, Oppenheimer and Dark Knight and blah, blah, blah. Anyway, I think it's kind of, yeah. I think that's a great person to put in that position only because he's got a really good vision of his own, but he's got a great vision of cinema as an art form.
Yeah.
And I say that because, and this is not a knock at any superhero movie, because it doesn't matter what movie it is, I do believe there's an art form to it. And all superhero movies are being predicated off of comics, there's an art to it. And so I'm not knocking anything, but I do feel that because of the superhero movement in films, I feel like some people the average moviegoer is not really looking at them as an art form like they used to. That's my opinion. And I feel like Nolan's a good choice to kind of go, hey, guys, We used to make these amazing, 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 amazing movies back in the 80s and 90s. And we've slowly gotten away to some of that because of the specific genre. Not that we still want that genre, but we also need to bring back some of these other standalone movies that are amazing. And I think he's the perfect guy to kind of usher that along. So,
yeah. And I always do kind of wonder, because I know there's been like Martin Scorsese, for example, has like thrown shade at like superhero films before and stuff. And part of me doesn't know if it's like, is it superhero films that are at fault, or is it more of a sign of the times? You know, like, would the same kinds of movies be made now if superhero films weren't a big thing? You know, maybe it would just be like a lot of goofy action films and stuff that maybe they didn't have the characters wearing spandex, but they'd still be like tonally and you know, development wise like the same level of cinematography. And so I kind of wonder, like, I feel like people blame superhero movies a little too much, because I think when you look at like what Zack Snyder was trying to do with his movies, or you look at the Dark Knight trilogy and you know, certain other superhero films, it's like, no, superhero films can be art. I feel like they get a lot of the blame. So I guess I'm mostly just in a superhero mood, so I gotta defend superhero cinema.
No. But I'm not knocking superhero cinema. I'm just saying, yeah. I think there's a focus that got pulled away. Like, people are like, oh, it's another superhero movie. It's like, no, guys, these are good movies. It's just, you're not looking at them the way a movie could be looked at. Do you know? I don't know.
Yeah, absolutely. And that's the one thing I always wanted for superhero films in general, because it's like, you know, one of my top favorite genres ever. So I always wanted to see superhero films that were approached in that sort of artistic sort of way. But I do think Christopher Nolan, great choice. He's obviously one of the biggest, especially when you talk about just recognizable director names of our generation. Like, he's just like first and foremost, like, everybody knows him. He's a household name. And like you were saying, he does have a very good view about cinema, the art of cinema, but also just like his cultural takes are always really interesting as well. Like, I remember during COVID, when a lot of movies were being released straight to streaming, you know, or they'd be released in the theater and on, you know, and on your streaming service at the same time, I remember Nolan had some really good quotes when it came to commenting on that. But I don't know if he has any quotes about, like, thinking about the state of the world now, like, if he has any, like, poignant quotes about AI or anything like that. But I feel like he would have some really interesting takes on that as well. So definitely probably the best man for the job, to be honest. So, yeah, really interesting story there.
Yeah. Here's a big one. Paramount and Netflix are getting real close to the possibility of a bidding war to purchase Warner Brothers. That is crazy talk, in my opinion. Not that it's a bad thing. Like, you know, it's just going to shift things around. But if, like, Warner Brothers gets sold to either Paramount, or you got to think about the content here. Netflix purchases Warner Brothers. That means all the DC content and that kind of stuff that Warner Brothers owns is going to shift and move over to the Netflix platform. And then you're going to have Paramount, same kind of thing. If they purchase it, you see what I'm saying? Like, there's your huge shift there. So, but that would include the film rights to all the DC stuff and that kind of thing. So this is going to be something we're going to have to watch a little closely. There's not a lot to this. It's just, Paramount has been like looking at it for a while, I guess. And Netflix is like, hey, we might be interested over here. Let's take a look at that. You know what I mean? So that's, we're going to have to, there's not much I can say other than this could be crazy. So, it's kind of like that Disney Fox merger. Like, here we go. but it's going to affect a lot of our streaming platforms and where we get content from and everything. So let's take a look. You know what I mean? So
yeah. I think things are going to be shifted around, but I think I'm also hearing this and I'm like, just think of the crossover possibilities. You know, on one hand we have like Justice League versus Transformers. On the other hand, we have like, you know, John Constantine going to Hawkins and, you know, interacting with the Stranger Kid things folk. So just think of the crossovers.
Yeah, I'm down for that. John Constantine John Constantine and 11 going on adventures. Let's do it.
Yeah. Yeah. There you go.
All right. Speaking of that, Stranger Things real quick, and I probably should have brought it up in watching and reading. There is a Stranger Things season 5 sizzle reel that dropped on that they dropped on YouTube yesterday. It is not a lot. There's, I mean, spoilers, let's be real. There's a shot of like Eleven, like holding her hand up, like she's using her powers. Not a spoiler. It's Stranger Things. There's a shot of a Demogorgon. Not a spoiler. It's Stranger Things. You know what I mean? Like, guys, yeah. It's the final season. You know, they showed a little bit, but it was also more of like them talking to the camera and being like, you know, it's been a long journey and watching these kids grow up and like the standard director thing where they're not going to tell you anything, but they're going to tell you things. So, yeah, if you get a chance, check it out. It was kind of cool to watch. Anyway, Scream 7 is on the way. Hayden Panettiere is set to return. So Kirby be back. She was in 5?
She's in Scream 5. Not 5.
She's in 6. Because she was in, because she's the main character for Scream 4. She was not in 5, but she was in 6. So she's coming back for 7.
Okay, so. yes, that sounds right.
Is that right? Yeah, it has
to be.
Yeah,
no, I think you're right. It's hard. I get 5 and 6 mixed up a little bit because I've watched both of them only once. But I think you're right. She was in 4 for sure, and then came back for 7 because that was the one in New. Or sorry, came back for 6 because that was the one in New York, as far as I remember. So
yeah. Well, here we are with some more James Bond rumor mill. Who's directing? Who's not directing? Who's cast? Who's not cast?
Great.
It was funny because a buddy of mine, like I already had this story flagged and then I was at work and someone, because they know I'm like the movie guy at work kind of thing. They're like, hey, did you see this? And I started laughing immediately. Like, what's so funny? I'm like, it's another James Bond rumor, but yeah, what do you got? So details on the upcoming James Bond film, Denis Villeneuve will start casting the process next year after he finishes Dune 3. Will be a fresh-faced British actor like in his late 20s or early 30s, so it's going to be a no-name. It could be an origin story about how he got recruited to MI6 and attained 007 status, aiming for a 2028 release date. Now, what's funny about that is that's the report I found, but the friend of mine at work found one that said a 2027 release date. Nobody knows. So, again, we are on the edge, waiting for that. Baywatch reboot gets a series green light by Fox for a 2026-2027 season. Fox Baywatch reboot has landed a 12-episode straight-to-series order for the broadcast network for a premiere during the 2026-27 season. This new iteration of the lifeguard action drama comes from the Burn Notice creator, Matt Nix. That could be really cool. I don't know if you ever watched Burn Notice, but that's a really fun show. And if that guy's going to go and tackle Baywatch, that just sounds like a no-brainer. But hey, man, we're getting Baywatch back on TV. So there we go.
There you go.
Thoughts? Thoughts?
I don't know if I have too many thoughts on this one, but part of me feels like this won't work, you know, like nobody's wanting Baywatch in the year 2025. But then part of me is also like
Baywatch Con is coming and we need to get caught up.
Well, that part of me is kind of like, no, maybe this actually really will work. I guess I haven't watched like Outer Banks, for example, but I think of some of those sort of like.
Yeah, you need to watch that, too, dude.
Some of those sort of why haven't I watched every single thing that ever exists? but thinking of some of those sort of like drama procedural shows like that, I feel like Baywatch could maybe work. You know, I'm kind of curious. I don't know how to pass judgment until we see more. You know what I mean?
Yeah, same. I was actually thinking the same kind of thing because before it was meant to be this like, you know, throw in like the take a show like. Chicago Med, and that level of drama, that level of excitement, that level of maybe a funny line or two, but you know, take something of that degree and it really could. So yeah. All right, ready to travel back to the realm of Westeros?
Yeah, of course. Who isn't?
This is crazy. All right, so next year. And this is crazy. Next year, we're getting two Game of Thrones spinoff television series next year, which is nuts to me because I thought they were going to be spread out a little bit more. So we are getting Night of the Seven Kingdoms, which is a six-part show. It's a 6-episode season, first season for Knight of the Seven Kingdoms, based on the book Knight of the Seven Kingdoms, which is the story of Duncan the Tall and Little Aegon, or Egg is what they call him. So it's Duncan Egg. That's going to premiere in January of 26, followed by season 3 of House of the Dragon, which is supposed to drop at like a June-ish of 26. So January, you're going to get 6 episodes. A couple months later, boom, we got season 3 of House of the Dragon. That's awesome. I'm really excited. Let's get back to Westeros. That being said, nice. World of Ice and Fire continue to expand, and now George Martin's fantasy epic is taking on the big screen. HBO CEO has confirmed that there is a film set in the Game of Thrones universe is officially in development at Warner Brothers, and HBO, with Martin himself, is involved in shaping the project. They're going to develop idea where we'll see if it's good. We'll read the scripts along with them. I think it could be fun and interesting. I mean, that's the point of development. You see where the story is worthy of being in theaters and a big spectacle. I think it'd be fun. So we could be getting a Game of Thrones film on top of all this, which, again, dude, that's awesome.
Yeah, why not? Yeah, that sounds right. That actually sounds really amazing to watch it on the big screen. You know what I mean?
It does. And then here we go. Aegon's Conquest, long rumored series, is officially in develop and will chronicle Aegon Targaryen's bloody campaign to unite the Seven Kingdoms under the Iron Throne, release date to be announced. Followed by The Golden Empire, an animated series set in the far eastern lands of the Yeti, exploring the culture and history never seen on screen. Which is a part of also within the Game of Thrones. And then we have The Sea Snake, or The Nine Voyages. Originally planned as a live action, this project has shifted to animation to better capture the globe-spanning adventure of Cloris Valerian as she explores the far corners of the known world still in development. I'm not done. And then 10,000 Ships, the saga of warrior queen Nymeria and her legendary migration to Dorne, is back on HBO's slate after years of uncertainty. A new draft of the script is in works, but no release date has been set. So that means we get House of the Dragon, Knight of the Seven Kingdoms, a possible movie, Aegon's Conquest, Golden Empire, Sea Snakes, and 10,000 Ships. That's 7 more Game of Thrones projects in the works over at HBO. They are all in on the world of Westeros. So we have no reason to be off the air because we're going to have a lot of stuff to talk about. Thoughts on this?
Yeah, I mean, this is awesome. It sounds daunting just listening to that, but I mean, can you have too much of a good thing? This sounds like great.
And, I feel like, yes, you can, but I'm... But I'm with you. Yes, it sounds fantastic.
You would think that the movie would be the big announcement. But I mean, I'm actually pretty excited and curious about the animated projects they're talking about. And I'm kind of curious, like, what style of animation are we going to get? You know, is it going to be something CG? Is it going to kind of be similar to like the Clone Wars? Is it going to be similar to like Lord of the Rings, War of the Rohirrim? Is this, you know, this is at
that would
Warner
be,
Brothers,
that'd be so, like where I would think would be amazing if they shot for that, you know?
Yeah, absolutely. But then I also just think because it's like Warner Brothers, you know, are we going to get something closer to like the DC animated movies? You know, it's,
yeah.
I'm really curious how this is going to play out, but really, really fun stuff. A lot of cool stuff to sink your teeth into. So the one thing that made me raise my eyebrow was the one animated series that's going to be based on the, did you say the Yeti?
Yeah.
And do you know anything about the Yeti people or anything like that?
That's where I'm going to have to do a little Game of Thrones digging. So I have... Which really cool. I have, and I say that I've read all the source material, but the one thing I haven't read in its entirety, is I was given for Christmas one year. It was a book titled "The World of Ice and Fire," and it's it's that tabletop, it's that coffee table size, like almost like a history book, And yeah. I've read sections of it because that's not a book you read cover to cover. It's not a novel. It's one of those books that you flip through and you're like, oh, that's cool. That's awesome. And you get sucked down a rabbit hole and you read like 10 pages because you just read about this cool thing and you put the book down and you come back to it. So that's where I'm going to have to dig in. And that's information on that is probably going to be heavily found there more than anything, in my opinion, in terms of what I own that's on the shelf. So.
Yeah, definitely. But it is something that is something I'm interested in knowing. So, yeah, really, really cool stuff. A lot of Game of Thrones news this week, I guess.
Yeah, really cool. I can't wait. But that brings us to the end of the news, my friend. Are you ready to talk about tonight's list?
Yeah, let's go for it.
Perfect. We are going to take a quick break and we'll be right back.
For the top five.
Okay. This week was my pick. We like to do actors every now and then, or at least discuss their film career. And we sometimes I find actors hard to do because you're like, can I do a list? Have I seen enough of their movies? That kind of stuff bouncing around. And then I was like, hey, let's talk action films. So I was looking at action stars that we haven't talked about. So tonight we're talking about the career of Sylvester Stallone and some of the action films he's been in, because I feel like that's the majority of his career. But at the same time, he's like one of the big names when it comes to action, especially in the 80s, 90s. And then like he's been popping up here and there lately. He is known, obviously, for Rocky and, you know, win some Academy Awards there. He's known as Rambo. He's got the Expendables films. And what I forgot and didn't realize when I picked this is he's been in so many sequels to things. I mean, we got five Rambos. We got five, six Rockies plus the Creed films. We got four Expendables. You see what I'm saying? He's been in multiple Guardians of the Galaxy films. That's where I was like, holy cow. But I do have a pretty broken up list, so it's not like I'm doing Rambo 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. I will say that I have seen 39 of the movies off of this niche list here. In terms of his film career, I've seen 39 of his films. What about you? How do you handle this list? Did you find it difficult?
Yeah, I didn't find that too difficult. I was actually surprised. I've only seen around 20 of Sylvester Stallone's movies.
Hey, you counted this time.
Yeah. But a lot of his movies also were just like, you know, they were big action movies that came out in the 80s and 90s. And so many of them I wanted to see growing up. But it's just one of those things like, yeah, my parents aren't going to let me watch that. Yep, I'm not going to be allowed to watch that. And then so there's a lot of his movies that I still need to watch. But he has been in some amazing, amazing films. And I love that he's been in, you know, he's been in The Expendables, but he's also been in Rocky. Like there's this huge breadth of I don't want to say quality, but like he's been in some major popcorn flicks. And then he's been in like, you know, like Oscar worthy films and stuff like that. And that's really awesome. The other surprise to me, which you don't really think about with Sylvester Stallone, but he's actually done a number of comic book movies. Like when you think of like you're saying Guardians of the Galaxy, when you think of Judge Dredd and stuff like that, like I remember writing down all the movies I had seen him in and I was just like, he's actually done a lot more like superhero stuff than you would have thought. But no, I didn't think this list was hard. I feel like he's one of the big action movie stars from my childhood. So once I kind of had written down all the movies I had seen, it was kind of pretty easy to just kind of pick out my favorites. I think with this one, the difficulty is the sequels. You know, like if you've seen all of the Rocky movies, you have to pick which one's your favorite and stuff like that. So I think that's the difficulty with this list in particular. But yeah. Yeah, not too difficult.
It is, for sure. Yeah. Nice. All right. Well, I do have two honorable mentions. I don't know about you.
Yeah, I do as well.
All right, cool. And it is your first go because it was my pick.
Yeah, sure thing. So I was just mentioning Sylvester Stallone has been in a lot of, or not a lot, but he's been in a chunk of superhero movies. And that's my first honorable mention, actually. I went with Guardians of the Galaxy 2. He plays the character Starhawk, who is actually the original leader of the Guardians of the Galaxy comic or superhero team in the comic books. And I love the Guardians movies. Like when it comes to like just movies that Sylvester Stallone has appeared in, that, you know, like which ones are my favorite? I feel like the Guardians movies are like super high up there, but really his role in the Guardians films is pretty small. So like, I can't really,
it's more of a cameo.
Exactly, and that's why I didn't put it on my proper list, but that's why it makes an honorable mention, because I love it nonetheless, but his role in this movie is pretty small, so there you go.
Yeah, I mean, Guardians of the Galaxy Volume 2 is a great movie, but yeah, he's got this little minor cameo role that you're just like, oh yeah, okay, you know? Like,
yeah, absolutely.
And there was rumor that he was going to be in the movie, and then we see him, you're just like, yeah, okay, and then hoping, and I thought he was going to be, I thought that was like a spawn into something bigger for Guardians 3, but it was about the same size, you know, when you got to Guardians 3. Right. So I was like, yeah, okay. All right. So my first honorable mention tonight is going to be Judge Dredd.
Nice.
Judge Dredd, this is a fun movie. This is a comic book movie. If you don't know what Judge Dredd is, it's basically like a future cop. It's the best way of wording it.
Yeah.
This is a dystopian future where law and order is like on a level of like, it's just, I don't want to say oppressive so much as the laws are written differently. So like the police are now judge, jury, and can be judge, jury, and executioner on the spot. And it's the way the law is written and like, you know, that kind of stuff. And Judge Dredd is, so all the police are actually called judges. You know, you can be arrested and convicted right there on the spot without, you know, standard due process. And it's based around a conspiracy and like a little bit of a murder mystery stuff, but it's still got the classic action adventure awesomeness that you got from the 90s. A lot of cool practical effects, a lot of cool practical like makeup prosthetic stuff for some of the gory scenes that happen in there.
Yeah.
Ultimately, the movie gets a little silly because of the they did everything in their power to adapt it properly from page to screen, but it is the 90s. So, it doesn't translate as the well, but I mean, I thought it was a lot of fun when I was younger. I don't know how well it holds up now. I haven't seen it in a little while. But a lot of cool stuff, cool robots, cool vehicles and bikes and, you know, mm-hmm. weapons and stuff. So yeah, I mean, this is just a fun popcorn comic book movie, if you will.
Yeah, absolutely. And like you mentioned the practical effects. I feel like there is some there's some CG in there too that I'm sure doesn't age well.
Yeah, but when I was early a kid, early CG, but yeah.
But when I was a kid, like that CG looked awesome. Like it looked so cool. So I definitely love this movie. I think my problem with Judge Dredd is just I haven't seen it for so long. Like I think I might have only seen it one time, and that was like in the mid 90s or whatever. So a lot of the specifics kind of escape me. So it didn't make my final list, but definitely a great pick. And I feel like this one's important to mention because Judge Dredd is like, he's legit one of the biggest comic book characters from the 80s and 90s. And it's an independent comic, you know, it's like it's an indie thing. And it ended up being this massive, like, you know, movie. And then they also rebooted the movie with the newer Dredd with Carl Urban. But yeah, awesome stuff.
Yeah.
Good pick.
Yeah. All right, man. What's your next one?
Yeah. So I'll move into another comic book movie because, of course, I'm going to do that. But now this is where you're going to groan at my honorable mentions. But I actually went with Guardians of the Galaxy 3. But this is one of those things, again, when it comes to writing down all his movies, like Guardians of the Galaxy 2 and 3 are two of, like, they're up there as like two of my favorites of movies that he's been in. But again, this is another one where I think his role in Guardians of the Galaxy 3 is a little bit bigger than Guardians 2, but Not that much. You know, it's still really more of a cameo thing. So that's why this one's an honorable mention as well.
Gotcha. Yeah, I got the same comments for Guardians 3 that I do for Guardians 1.
Right on.
In terms of Sylvester Stallone, like, you know, you're just like, because when you get to that part in Guardians 3, you're like, yeah, there he is. So, mm-hmm. Yeah.
Absolutely.
Anyway, so my last honorable mention is Rocky 4. Rocky 4, look, the first one's amazing. I'm not like I have nothing against like the other three movies, but Rocky 4 was the Cold War movie. That's the United States versus Russia. And you know that Rocky's going to go. He's got to fight the Russian boxer. And the only complaint I have with this movie in terms of a rewatch is I forgot how short it was. It's a much shorter movie than you think. It's like with all the stuff that happens in it, it's only an hour and a half, like if that. It feels like a much longer film, but Rocky's got to train for the fight. You know, Drago's got to train for the fight, and then they got to go in and they're going to do it. And Rocky's there to partially not just win for America, but also avenge his friend's death because Drago killed his friend. He killed Apollo Creed in the ring. So Rocky's going to go in and battle him. And it was like the big thing with that movie for me is the fight scene at the end. When it's the actual fight that they've been training for, and you got Rocky and Drago pounding away at each other, and the Russian government shifts gears and starts cheering on Rocky. That's the thing. That's that thing that catches you. That's that thing. That's that goosebump moment, that kind of thing. Really cool movie. I always back up Rocky IV, even though the other ones, you know, the first one won the Academy. That was the one that got all the Oscar attention and stuff, which is great.
Yeah.
But Rocky IV sits in a nice special place in my heart because of like how I like just how I felt watching that end fight scene. So
awesome.
Yeah, there you go.
Awesome. Yeah, this I kind of got Rocky IV and Rocky V mixed up. I have seen this one. I don't think I've seen Rocky V. So that's a thing. But no, this is a great movie, and I haven't seen this for a while, so I can't comment on the runtime, but I'm telling you, man, in a world of, you know, 2.5 to 3.5 hours for every single film, I kind of miss the shorter run times from the 80s and the 90s. You know, like I miss when movie, you know, there could be some movies that were an hour and a half. So I'm kind of curious, like the pacing for this one might actually be a breath of fresh air, you know, if you go and revisit this one. So
sure.
There you
and
go.
I'm in the minority on that because there are times that I'm like, when I see an hour and a half, I'm like, oh, OK, like, you know, now I want it to be minimum 2 hours, but that's me. Anyway, what's your first actual pick of the night?
Yeah, you're making me feel like we should do a top 5 hour and a half movie list. I think that'd be pretty pretty interesting. So
that's going to be hard to Google, but yeah, go ahead.
So my next one, again, you'll probably groan. I'm going to continue with my James Gunn love fest. That is my list. But I went with The Suicide Squad, the James Gunn Suicide Squad movie. And Sylvester Stallone voices King Shark in this movie. And I actually didn't realize that. And actually, when I was putting my list together, I was trying to think back. I was like, was I aware that Sylvester Stallone voiced King Shark? Or was it something I didn't know? And it's one of those, like, you know, like Vin Diesel voicing Groot sort of things. Like, you don't even realize it, but you think back on it. And when it comes to, like, Groot versus King Shark, I do think that King Shark definitely had a lot more variety to his lines. But it's also a performance that is pretty... it's not the craziest performance, but he is there throughout. And even though, like, I actually do prefer the more comic book accurate version of King Shark, where he's like a little bit smarter, seems a little bit more intimidating, I did really enjoy James Gunn's version of this character. And, you know, that character went and kind of influenced the version of that character that we see in the anime Suicide Squad Isekai, which I enjoyed quite a bit. So I had to pick this one. Kind of a weird role to pick for a top 5 Sylvester Stallone movie list. But again, it's one of those things, after I wrote down all the movies, this would be up there as one of my favorites. So it's kind of more of an honesty thing. Like, okay, yeah, I'll put Suicide Squad on there. And I did think that he was in this movie a little bit more than the Guardians film. So that's why this one makes my list over those two. So there you go.
Sure. No, I'm with you. And this, I had a lot of fun watching this movie, and I, unlike you, knew that Sylvester Stallone voiced King Shark as I walked in to see the movie.
So that's the thing is, I might have known that. I just couldn't remember, like, did I know that? Or was it just like, I didn't, you know? It's been a while since I've thought too extensively about this film, so.
Yeah, no, I hear you there. I knew going in, so, you know, there you go. But yeah, no, he was great as King Shark. And King Shark, I mean, the only other King Shark we had was from the Flash TV show, which I thought was pretty decent. And then throw in some little bit more expensive CG, and I just think it, you know, stuck the landing, if you will. So
yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, good call. The Suicide Squad. I liked both of them, but I think The Suicide Squad was a little more where we wanted to be. You know what I mean? It was really good. So I do wonder, because of Peacemaker, how Suicide Squad fits into James Gunn's DCU. Just saying. All right. Moving on. My first one of the evening is a movie called Daylight. Have you ever seen this movie?
No, this is one of those 90s action movies that I wanted to see, but yeah, never.
This is, I saw this one in the theater. This is a ride. This is fun. It is intense. This is a movie, Sylvester Stallone plays, EMS, emergency rescue, something. I'm not 100% sure where he, I don't remember which like emergency team he was a part of, but so basically what happens is you have the Lincoln Tunnel, which goes from New Jersey to New York, and there's an accident that happens underneath the tunnel, which causes a section of the tunnel to collapse, and there are people trapped inside the Lincoln Tunnel. And Sylvester Stallone knows that they're in the tunnel under the Hudson River. You know what I mean? So it is like you are underwater in a car tunnel and trapped. And he gets called in to go in, and they're like, well, you know how to get in the tunnel. He's like, yeah, there's a whole series of like pipes and passageways and stuff I have to go in to get down there. But then getting people out are going to be the hard part. When he gets down there, he finds out he can't. Obviously, he gets whoever's still alive, and it's like, all right, I'm going to get you guys out. He can't go back the way he came, so they got to find another way out. But once he gets down there, because the opening of the movie is very standard natural disaster kind of catastrophe, and then everyone's sealed in, and then he's got to go down and rescue him. Well, once he gets down there, it becomes incredibly, like, it's standard disaster movie until he gets down in the tunnel, and then it becomes hyper intense and like edgy your seat, like action, gotta survive, get people out of here, and then all the traps and everything that they have to go through just to get out of the tunnel, whether it be leaking water coming through the concrete, whether it be a car that was on fire that they didn't realize, it explodes, causes another problem, whether because it's New York and you're underground with the tunnel, rats coming through and scaring people, or like, you see what I'm saying? Or like a downed power line that's going to cause water to electrify. It's intense. But it is nice. I had a lot of fun watching this movie. I thought it was really good. I haven't seen it in a few years, but I do believe it probably still holds up just because of what they had to go through down there. He probably would have more equipment, to be honest, if he was going in, but I thought it was pretty good. So I'd highly recommend Daylight. So there you go.
Awesome. Yeah, that's great. Yeah, I haven't checked this one out, but your description sounds super intense. So this would be a fun one to hunt down. So I'm actually curious if it's streaming somewhere, but yeah, sounds awesome.
Yeah. All right. I'm going to look that up real quick while you tell us what your next...
Yeah, so I'll do my my last goofy, well, I don't know if I can say that definitively, but in my mind, my last like super goofy popcorn flick, and then the rest of my movie, I think, or the rest of my list, I think, is better movies, I guess I can say. But my next pick, I actually went with the Expendables, and the Expendables for me, I do have a weird like personal affinity for this film, because I remember when I went to see The Expendables, I remember going with a group of people. Like, I worked this crappy retail job that I hated, but I went with a bunch of my buddies from work to go see The Expendables. And on the way there, you know, we were going to go to see the midnight showing, like that Thursday night that it came out. And on the way there, we actually went to a couple different bars and had a couple drinks and eventually made our way to the theater. It was a super fun night. But you can imagine, you know, going to a bar and having, you know, a couple beers and then sitting down in your seat for a midnight show while you're working like practically the graveyard shift at a retail job. And you can imagine it would be hard to stay awake for that. But the thing about The Expendables is I stayed awake. I was on the edge of my seat. I had such a blast with this film, even though on paper, I probably should have been falling asleep. So that's how much fun this film was. But it's, besides that personal story that I always liked about it, it's just like a ridiculous cast of characters. You know, you have Sylvester Stallone, you have Arnold on screen, you have Jason Statham, Jet Li, you know, Dolph Lundgren. You have all these action movie legends that are all basically put together, you know, for really, like, when it comes down to it, they're really just put together to kick ass on screen and for us to enjoy it. And that's what it was. Like, it's almost like a movie where the plot doesn't matter. It's just all your favorite action stars on screen together and just going crazy. And my favorite part of the movie is honestly the banter. Like, for such a crazy action movie, I love just, like the scenes that are the quiet scenes. It's like all the characters like hanging out or getting ready for something and they're all just like talking crap to each other. I always really enjoyed those parts of the movies first and foremost, which I think is pretty funny. But also, like, this movie, another thing that I loved about it, especially at the time, because I remember when I saw this movie, I was on such a horror kick. Like, I was watching, like, any horror movie I could get my hand on. And you don't always think about this with The Expendables, but the gore, like, the gore level in this movie is really, really great. Like, when it comes to the crazy action scenes with them, you know, like, shooting people down and throwing knives at people and stuff, the splattering of blood in this movie is definitely at the level you want it to be. So, yeah, The Expendables, super fun film. Kind of a goofy pick, but I really like this one. And it's a little bit for that personal reason. But it's also, like, I do think that it's kind of just, like, a really fun crazy thing, and it's kind of crazy that this movie happened in the first place, you know what I mean?
It is crazy that a movie like that happened, because it's a massively ambitious project to put all those action stars together. I mean, that's one of those things where you see the picture, you see the cast photo, and you're just like, there's a lot of ego in that picture. But no, the movie is a ton of fun. Like you said, the gore, the humor, like the action sequences, like, ambitious project for sure, but it is so much fun, full of, like, you know, I mean, it's also got a lot of heart to it. You knew that they're just like, hey guys, we've been making action movies together. We've been making action movies forever on opposing teams, if you will. I think we need to get together as, you know, friends and making a really cool action flick, and, you know, we're all in, and everyone's going to come see it because they're going to want to see Schwarzenegger and Stallone in a movie together. They're going to want to see, oh wait, Bruce Willis is here, Harrison Ford's here, you know what I mean? Like, yeah, throwing at action stars, you're just like, oh my god, Jet Li's here, you know, like, yeah. So yeah, good stuff.
Yeah, the only other thing I would say too is I do think this movie is it is worth bringing up for a Sylvester Stallone list, because this is not only starring Sylvester Stallone, but also directed and co-wrote by him. So this movie really was like Sylvester Stallone's baby. And I think that's something to keep in mind, too. Like, if it weren't for him, this honestly never would have happened. So, yeah. But what do you got for us next?
All right. So first off, before I jump into that, we do have we do have Daylight is available streaming on pretty much everything, but it's rentable. So,
I gotcha.
Yeah. So there you go. All right. So the next one on my list is a movie called The Specialist. This was advertised as Sylvester Stallone and Sharon Stone. They were your two leads. So Stallone and Stone, right? That's how it kept being advertised that way because of the names. And then throw in James Woods and a whole bunch of other great cast members from like that time period. So The Specialist, you have Sylvester Stallone is a explosives expert in the military. And the opening of the movie deals with him doing a whole, like, they're doing this mission. They got to blow something up. And then him and the guy he works with, his partner, have a disagreement over a thing because a kid's involved, and he's like, you can't detonate because there's a kid there, you know, and it's showing you that he's the good guy, basically, kind of opening scene. And then he gets roped into a contract where he gets kind of hired to be like the explosives expert to help take down like a mob hit kind of a thing. And it becomes involved in like this whole mafia, like hit conspiracy sort of thing. So you got Sylvester Stallone as the explosive specialist, if you will. They're like, we need to hire a specialist, right? That's so he gets roped in on it. And then you throw in like Sharon Stone as the partial love interest and part of the conspiracy, and the James Woods, he's the actual villain of the movie. He is wonderful. You want to watch James Woods just be amazing on screen, yelling at people, like throwing lines out, chewing scenery. That's, in my opinion, it's one of the best James Woods movies out there. But otherwise, this is a great action movie with a lot of intensity to it because of the explosives and that kind of thing. So yeah, there you go. The Specialist.
Awesome.
Have you ever seen this?
No, I was just going to say, I haven't seen this one. And yeah, this is one of those ones that slipped through the cracks, mainly because of when it came out. So, but sounds really cool. It's not that I don't want to watch it. I just haven't.
No, you're good, man. I hear you.
But
I hear you. All right. What do you got for me next?
Yeah, so I might kind of screw up the whole list order, but I'm just going to do it because I'm going to pick the movie that I probably should be saving for last. But I think the other movies on my list might be funner to talk about later on. So I'm going to do the one I should be saving for last right now. And that movie is Rocky. The original Rocky film. This is a movie that, I think the first time I saw this was in, I want to say like eighth grade. One of my teachers showed it to our class, probably just because the teacher wanted to watch it, like, to be honest. But I remember just thinking it was like an amazing film and just learning about how like this was a Best Picture winner. Is that correct?
I don't think it was a Best Picture winner. Hold on.
Oh, really?
Keep talking.
Okay.
He won. I know he won for the screenwriting and stuff like that. And he was nominated for acting one, but you know what I mean?
Like, Yeah, maybe that was it. But I think like what it was I was just so impressed. Like, I thought the movie was great. And then I was surprised to find out like it really was like a real force at the Oscars and stuff. And I just thought that was really cool. And it's a movie that I've seen a number of times since. But it's always good. Like, you can't put on Rocky and not have a good time. But it's also like this just super endearing story about like kind of this guy who's like, you know, it's kind of like you see his life as a struggle, like his inner city life, and he's struggling and stuff, but he gets this crazy chance to go up against, like, you know, Apollo Creed, like this huge boxing champion. And it's just kind of his journey there. And it's one of those movies that you watch, and you watch his training, and you watch him give his all. And it's just like, honestly, like, it's a super impressive, super inspiring story. And, you know, I mean, this is fresh in my mind since I just watched Cobra Kai, the TV show. But there is that that episode where Danny and Johnny and Cobra Kai are talking about the Rocky movies. And Danny's talks about how, like, he knows that Johnny likes some of the sequels. But for him, it always goes back to that first film. And you see Rocky give his all. You see him train so hard. And when he gets to the end, like that last that boxing match, he doesn't win. Like, he does not win the match, but it's still victorious because he tried his best. He strived so hard, and he left his mark on the world of sports, like on the world of boxing. Like, he's now known as one of the world's greatest boxers, and he's somebody who came from nothing. And this movie, like, this is starring Sylvester Stallone, but it was also written by him. And in a weird way, I do think that this movie is a little bit autobiographical, because I know I've heard stories about like how much Sylvester Stallone was really struggling early in his career, and it's crazy that like one of the biggest movie stars ever would have started that way. But I think that he put some of that into the writing of this movie. But yeah, it's just an amazing film. everybody should watch it. Yeah, it's great. I don't know if you have any thoughts on Rocky, and I don't know if you looked up the Academy Awards
relation
to this one or anything.
I did, and I don't have much to add because you kind of said it all, but I'll add with this. So Google is a little off because they said it was in 1977, and I'm like, that's not how that played out in 77, because 77 is when Star Wars came out. So I did another check, and Rocky was 76. So that's where so if you Googled this right now, it's going to say 77. But if you check like IMDb and proper sources, it's 76. So here you go.
Sure.
Nominated for sound mixing, nominated for original screenplay, nominated for actress, nominated for best supporting actor, nominated for Burgess Meredith and Burt Young, supporting actor, nominated for best actor, winner of film editing, winner best director, and winner best picture. So there you go.
Nice.
That's awesome. that's a lot for Rocky, but
yeah, absolutely. But I mean, we still talk about the movie today, so it definitely is one of the best movies of all time. So
sure is.
But yeah, did we match for Rocky or
we did not, unfortunately, because sometimes, like, not that Rocky's not a rewatchability movie, because Rocky is one hell of a rewatchable movie. I was kind of like, again, you have to weigh, sometimes when we do these lists, man, it's a lot of factors in play. You know what I mean? All right. Mm-hmm. But I am going to go back to one of his earlier films on the other side of the spectrum and say Rambo First Blood, the first Rambo movie. Was my next pick, which is a phenomenal one. That's that thing where Sylvester Stallone plays the Vietnam veteran. He's coming home. He's back stateside after Vietnam, and he's just walking down the street, basically like, do I get a hotel? Do I get a bite to eat? You don't really know where he's going. He gets dropped off by a cab, and he's walking down the small town, and the police immediately have a problem because they think he's a homeless drifter. Is he? You don't really get to find out because he's trying to answer questions and they kind of get up in his face and then arrest him. And then he kind of like runs from them, and then it becomes them hunting him. But it actually is him hunting them. It's crazy. Like the survival stuff to it. And then they have to bring in the military general to kind of talk him off the ledge. Like, dude, you're not in Vietnam anymore. That's not how the world is. And it's like, yeah, but they weren't listening. Like, yeah, we know they screwed up too, you know? So, but we got to talk you down. This spawned off another wonderful action series for Rambo, because clearly he's not going to sit back and stay stateside. He's going to go back into the thick of things, because that's the world he lives in. That's the world he's focused on. So Rambo is another great character created by Sylvester Stallone. But these movies are great. The first Rambo movie is very... it seems very personal and drama-esque, where the other ones are a little bit more military action adventure, if you will. It's more of a serious subject matter in that first one, and then the rest kind of come just more of that action, you know, that kind of thing. So, but yeah, Rambo, I always been a big Rambo fan. I don't know if First Blood's one of my favorites, but I feel like if I'm going to talk Rambo, it needs to be First Blood as opposed, you know what I mean? So I don't know where it sits on the hierarchy. I've never ranked the Rambo films, so.
Fair enough. But good call with this one. This is a great movie, great action film. This is another one kind of like Judge Dredd, like I was saying, where I just haven't watched this one enough. Like, a lot of the scenes aren't as fresh in my mind, but I do remember, like, when I actually did watch this as like a kid, I thought it was awesome and like super cool and stuff. So Rambo's awesome. I've never been like the biggest like I haven't seen all the Rambo movies sort of thing, but I do enjoy the ones that I've seen quite a bit. So yeah, good call with this one.
Yeah. All right, man. What do you got for your next one? Almost done.
Yeah, absolutely. For my next one, I actually went with the movie Demolition Man.
This one we matched on. I was kind of hoping we were. So go ahead.
Okay, awesome. And again, I don't know if I'm screwing up your order at all or anything.
Not at all.
But Demolition Man, I mean, I think we've talked about it on the show, But for me, the reason this movie makes my list, and this is actually definitely like one of my favorite Sylvester Stallone movies, is this is a movie that, I mean, in a way you could say it doesn't age well, because this is a movie that shows a vision of the future that hasn't really came to be. But in other ways, it's aged super well when it comes to, like, the cleanliness of everybody. Like, when you compare Demolition Man to, like, some of the crazy things that were going on during the pandemic, like, it does make you think, I guess, like, things could have actually went this direction in this movie. But this is a great movie. It's basically, you know, you have the story of, you have, like, Simon Phoenix, who is this, like, crazy criminal from the past who gets cryogenically frozen, and so does Sylvester Stallone, who's the one police officer who could take down Simon Phoenix, and then, you know, go into the future, you know, Wesley Snipes character Simon Phoenix ends up getting unfrozen, and so they of course have to unfreeze Sylvester Stallone's character, and it's like this crazy bonkers vision of the future, and you have these two characters, this, you know, police officer and this criminal in this futuristic world who are just fishes out of water. And when it comes to, like, the crazy sanitation laws, like, and I'm talking like physical sanitation, when it comes to, like, sanitizing your speech, you know, you're not allowed to cuss in the future, or you get tickets, stuff like that. There's a lot of crazy things where it really points out how these two characters are total fishes out of water. Combine that with the future tech. It's just a really fun movie, and it's one of those movies that really sticks with you. Like, I don't think there's a week that goes by that I don't think about some random part of Demolition Man. And let's be real, like, a lot of times, a
random part.
Well, no, I mean, a lot of times it will be thinking about, like, the three seashells and stuff like that. But it's true. Like, I don't think there's a week that goes by that.
Well, sometimes I think I think about the scene where they do, like, the high five hand, that weird high five handshake where they don't make physical contact. And he's like, what was that about? And they're like, yeah, well, they don't, you know, we've outlawed physical contact because, you know, after AIDS came this and after this came this. And so, you know, to prevent disease spreading, we don't have physical contact anymore. And you're just like, and then we lived through a pandemic and we're just like, oh my God, like, they're going to outlaw physical contact, you know? Anyway, continue.
No, absolutely. Or like when you think of like the class warfare aspects and like the ideas that like part of the population would be like living in the sewers, like not wanting to follow everybody else's rules when it comes to sanitation and stuff. Like, I don't know. I feel like you can see hints of like those sorts of divides nowadays. And it's really interesting how, like, even though Demolition Man is, like, again, I said, like, a false vision of the future, there's a lot of it that actually does age well in, like, a really weird way. But, I guess I was just commenting on, like, I feel like there is, like, literally, like, not a week goes by that I won't think about this movie in some way. And that's really why it makes my list. Like, it just has, like, that, something about it really sticks with me. And I don't know if it was just the age I was when I saw it or what it is, but it's an awesome film. It's like, in both ways, it's a goofy action film, but it's kind of like a sci-fi classic with a lot of, like, really poignant insight into, like, social commentary and stuff like that. You know, social there's some commentary, other great
where
actors.
We're headed and all that stuff. Yeah.
Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, there's some other great actors in here. Like, you know, there's, like, Rob Schneider, Sandra Bullock. Like, there's a really great cast in this one, too.
Dennis Leary.
I
really like this movie a lot. And this movie really does still hold up, even as silly as it gets. But yeah, even like some of the things, like the San Angeles is the name of the city because Los Angeles and San Diego got so big they had to combine cities. So it's the San Angeles Police Department. There's little things like that. There's like nods to like the past when he was a cop versus things now when they talk about, like, when you look at like Sandra Bullock's office and she has like the Lethal Weapon poster on the screen hanging on the wall, the weird virtual sex scene, you're just like, what is this, right? So then obviously the three seashells, like everyone likes to joke about, but yeah, there's a lot of really cool and then like throw in the radio when they're on the radio in the future, when they're in the car and instead of listening to normal music, their radio is commercial jingles. and they call them mini tunes.
Oh,
you know what I mean?
Yeah,
I think that's what they call them. They're just like all about like that one hot dog theme song or whatever, and he's like, "What the hell is this?" Right? Like,
you think about that, and then you think about like things like TikTok, and you're just like,
"Yeah,
I mean,
I know that's exactly right. It's not too far off, right?" So yeah, no, really cool stuff, man. This is a fantastic movie. This is a ton of fun. A lot of great action sequences. Like I said, I think it still holds up. Oh, the big one, Taco Bell winning the franchise war. So all restaurants are Taco Bell. And let me tell you, that movie takes place, what, 2052? We're in 2025. We're almost there. Let's see how close we really get. You know what I mean? Like, you know, what did they predict?
That's actually a good thing to point out, because I guess only time will tell. Like, maybe all the stuff from Demolition Man will come true. I actually thought like this was one of those movies kind of like Back to the Future too, where like we're already past 2015 and we can see that society wasn't really like that. I thought we maybe already were past where Demolition Man was, but good, you know, touche. Like, maybe a lot of this stuff will still come to fruition. So funny stuff.
Yeah, right on. All right, man, what's your, since we matched, I got to throw it back to you. So what's your last pick, man?
Yeah, absolutely. So I actually went with Demolition Man, hoping we weren't going to match, because I think I just had more to say about that one than my next pick. But for my last pick, because I actually do think Demolition Man is probably my favorite Sylvester Stallone movie. But my next pick is definitely within the top three. And for that pick, I actually went with the movie Cliffhanger. So, Drew, I know you love this movie. I don't know if we matched on this one as well.
We match on this one as well. And this one actually, like, this is that thing where this and Demolition Man kind of sit on that which one's better kind of a thing. So, but go ahead.
Fair enough. Yeah, and I didn't know sorry if I screwed up your list order, but it doesn't sound like...
Not at all. I honestly, if I started at the bottom and worked my way up to Cliffhanger, this is exactly how I wrote it down. So you didn't mess up anything.
So the weird thing about comparing this movie to Demolition Man, because I think both of them came out in a similar time, in a weird way I feel like Demolition Man is less of a serious movie, but I also think it's more serious when it comes to the social commentary, and that's actually really funny when you think about it. But Cliffhanger, it's an awesome movie. And it's basically, you have like Sylvester Stallone, who's like this expert, like, cliff climber, and he's like been involved in rescue missions and stuff like that. But it's really
it's mountain rescue or something like that.
Yeah.
It's like the park ranger is like the mountain rescue or whatever. Yeah. So.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely. But it's, when it comes down to it, it's really about like him getting embroiled in. Honestly, like, it's a heist movie, like, in a weird way. Like, it's this weird, like, you know, he ends up being forced, like, by like this terrorist group to you know, climb this mountain and rescue this like, was it a helicopter or something that was shot down with like they were transporting like a bunch of like money or something like that. And it's like,
no,
this weird,
it was
like
it was,
keep,
sorry,
keep going, because I can't remember
the
exact.
So it was the treasury plane. And then they had another plane. You remember the opening scene, The Dark Knight Rises, when they had the guys jump from the plane on the lines and they get on the other airplane?
Yeah, yeah.
And then like they were trying to rescue Bane. Well, instead of doing that where they destroy the other plane, this is that thing where like they're going to do a money transfer. They're going to hijack the plane mid-flight from another airplane and then do a transfer of getting the money to the plane. And at that point, and I swear this is where Christopher Nolan stole this idea before he did The Dark Knight Rises. But anyway, but it goes wrong, and the cases of money drop into the mountain range where Sylvester Stallone works in the mountain rescue stuff. And then when they go down there, when it comes to like kidnapping and all that stuff, and they basically like kidnap the mountain rescue team and then force them to help him locate the money. Stallone gets away. And then he become it, like the guy is trying to steal the money, end up becoming a hunt in the mountains and like survival and, you know, all the rock climbing stuff. And yeah, so it becomes, it just becomes a standard action film slash heist movie slash love story slash, you know what I mean? Like there's a lot of moving parts of this movie, but go ahead.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, I think like that's kind of the stuff I was getting at, but I couldn't remember how everything exactly played out, you know, but I also know that you've probably watched this movie a lot more than me. So, yeah.
This is, yeah, I love this movie
there. And, no, it's really like, I just love this movie. And I just remember, like, I have such fond memories of like Drew. I mean, I think it was back in the day, you probably showed this movie to me for the first time, but I just have such fond memories of this movie. And a lot of it is for just like the general vibe of it, because it's like, it's a crazy action movie. But it's also like a crazy survival action movie. And, you know, it's kind of like, oh, you thought Die Hard was intense. Well, this is Die Hard on the side of a cliff, you know, and there's so many great like cliff action scenes and stuff like that. But then there's also like when you think of Die Hard and you think of like the first one, like how John McClane through the whole movie is like barefoot and like how brutal that seems at times. For a huge chunk of this movie, you have Sylvester Stallone in a t-shirt like climbing at these high altitudes, like through the ice and the snow. And it just feels so like gritty and like such a cool piece of like survival action. So I just always really loved this one. And without like commenting on the film as a whole, this has one of the greatest opening scenes. Like when it comes to like something super intense, when it comes
I was trying to. You know? I was like, is he going to skip the opening? Like when you were talking, I'm like, is he going to
skip No, absolutely not.
That's like one of the most
on the opening, man.
Dude, the opening by itself, like you're saying a lot. Like we could do a cliffhanger show if we really wanted to. Dude, that opening sequence is one of the most harrowing, intense, sad, action-packed, like that is like one of the most amazing openings in my opinion for a film period. It's literally like a mountain rescue. Rock climbers are up on a cliff. They're stuck. Helicopter lands. They got to run a cable because there's no place for the helicopter to land. So they're going to run a cable and have them sort of zip line, I guess, across, I guess the best way of wording it, but it's more of a, you have to pull yourself across as opposed to like gravity allowing you to slide across. And the girl gets stuck in the middle because the harness breaks. So she's like hanging on for dear life. And I'm sorry, I'm ruining the opening of the movie, but it's the opening. And he runs out to get her. He like goes out on the cable to get her and he can't save her and she has to die. It is intense. It's one of the coolest openings for a film, period, in my opinion, because of how intense it is, because it sets the tone for the rest of the film. It really does. And it's kind of eye-opening in terms of like, oh my god, that's how you can open a story. Like even from a writing standpoint, that's how you can start a story. That's crazy. It'll set the tone, it'll set the like vibe and everything, and you're like, where is this movie gonna go from here, you know? And it's interesting because you're just like, it can only get worse, you know what I mean? And then you throw in all the stuff that took place, right? So yeah, dude, that opening is one of my absolute, like when you put in like the pantheon of like opening sequence, if you're like, what's your favorite opening sequence of any movie, this one definitely probably would be in like top five, right? If you're just like talking like opening sequences, but that's me. So I just thought that opening place was awesome, so there you go.
Yeah, it is one of the best openings, especially when it comes to action movies. And Drew, you've said this with like the new Alien Earth show, when you say they understood the assignment. And I feel like the writers of Cliffhanger understood the assignment, because like you don't want to go into the movie Cliffhanger and have the opening scene have like Sylvester Stallone in a coffee shop or something. Like this really opens up with like a crazy cliff mountain rescue sequence that's memorable and it's tragic and it's going to make you cry and stuff like that. So they totally understood the assignment. And I actually feel like filmmakers nowadays could take some notes from that sort of thing. Like how many movies have you seen that, you know, open up with characters hanging out with a guy in a comic shop, and you're like, really, you could have started out a little bit more exciting than that. But that's a discussion for a different day. The last thing I'll say about that opening sequence, though, is, you know, you were talking about Christopher Nolan stealing notes from Cliffhanger. That opening scene was actually parodied in the movie Ace Ventura: When Nature Calls. They basically stole that opening scene for that movie, which is pretty great, which involves Ace Ventura rescuing and tragically losing a raccoon in a very similar way. So
yeah,
great stuff.
Yeah, good stuff. All right, man, that brings us to the end of the list. What are we doing next week, man? It's your pick.
Yeah, so we just had a great list where we talked about amazing movies like Rocky and Rambo, stuff like that. And for next week, I picked a really batshit crazy one, and I've been saying that term a lot on the show, but I think it perfectly sums up next week's list. This is a list idea that came to mind yesterday, I think, and it was completely out of the blue. Actually, not completely out of the blue. I thought of this list idea because I was thinking about Peacemaker Season 1, and I was thinking about that cow alien monster from the ending of Peacemaker Season 1. And I remember thinking, like, that character could make, like, a really good video game level. Like, if they did the Peacemaker video game, that creature would be, like, the boss. Like, that would be the boss level character. And so I started thinking, I was like, I wonder what other movie characters are like that. And so next week I want to talk about our top 5 movie characters that would make really good video game boss characters. So there you go.
Man. Okay, hold on.
This is going to be ridiculous. It might be a challenge, but I think it'll be a funny topic. So
yeah, I'm just going to write it down as what you said, and then I'll have to figure out a title for next time we sit down and do this.
Yeah, like movie so, characters as boss characters or something. I don't know.
Yeah, no kidding. Well, all right, man, that sounds fun. Let's see what we can do. That brings us to the end of this week's episode. You want to toss this one in the can? What are we doing?
Yeah, let's go for it.
Cool. All right, everyone, do us all a favor. Check out our website, top5report.com. There you'll find a link to our social media, along with a link to our email, top5report@gmail.com. We are on Apple Podcasts, iHeartRadio, Stitcher, Amazon, Audible. You can subscribe to us in those places. If you do, you will not miss a single episode. You can also review us. We love those 5 stars, but we understand criticism because it helps us get better and it makes the words we say feel important. You can follow me personally on Twitter and Instagram at Drew3927. Peter, what about you?
Yeah, you can follow me on Twitter at NinjaPierre, and that's where I'll be reminding you that there's no wrong time to rock. So there you go.
There you go. All right, everybody, for the Top 5 Report, I'm Drew.
I'm Peter.
And we'll see you next week. Thanks for listening.